Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today, Israeli tanks fired on demonstrators marching toward Jewish soldiers in Gaza and killed 10. Now, let's talk through this and figure out if what happened should be condemned, as Europe has already condemned Israel. And we could talk through the actual events. And we'd be happy to hear your opinion, especially if it's a good opinion, especially if it's accurate. If not, we'll do our best to correct it. Our phone number here is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, most likely, if my observations of the mainstream media are accurate, you'll now hear a better description of what happened today in Israel than you'll get from any of your mainstream newspapers or evening news. So this is what apparently happened. Demonstrators, thousands of Palestinians, men, women, and children, were marching in Gaza and in the general direction of Jewish soldiers. There's been a Jewish military push into Gaza lasting for some days now. I think a total of over 30 Palestinians have been killed, and it's in an effort to root out terrorist leaders, bomb-making facilities, and such. And the initial reports were that Israeli helicopter missiles shot and killed 20 civilians in a protest march. Israel has video footage from its helicopters firing first flares, trying to warn the group to stop marching toward an Israeli military embankment with soldiers. And then the helicopter fired a missile, not into the crowd, but just off to the side, and it struck an empty field. And from the video to that point, no one had yet been injured, according to what you can make out on the video. By the way, many of the demonstrators marching, they were armed. So this is not a pro-life event. This is a Palestinian extremist event, which most of the Palestinian culture has been radicalized. And it's become a culture of terror. Well, then, still on video, an Israeli tank fired into an abandoned building that, if you could picture it, was somewhat between the soldiers and the oncoming march. And they fired in an attempt to deter this march toward the Israeli troops. Well, still, no one had yet been wounded, but the thousands of demonstrators, many armed, continued toward troops, and this is in a combat zone. This is not out. This is effectively in a combat zone. I'll describe this to you. The street they were marching on was strewn with unexploded bombs placed there by Palestinian militants to stop Israeli vehicles or tanks or bulldozers. So you've got thousands of Palestinians marching on a street with known by the Palestinians to be a combat zone. Unexploded ordnance. This is a bona fide battlefront. Soldiers then fired machine guns into that abandoned building as additional warnings, but still the Palestinian leaders allowed the march to continue, putting women and children into harm's way. That's when Israeli tanks fired four shells into that same abandoned building. Right, and of their apparent goal was to escalate the warning for the crowd to turn around. You don't want thousands of people, including women and children, including many armed men, including armed militants and terrorists and Hamas members and Islamic Jihad in a volatile mixture. You don't want that crowd coming upon an Israeli soldier entrenchment there. You don't want that to happen. So Israeli tanks fired four shells into the same abandoned building to escalate the warning for the crowd to turn around. And apparently that is when there were dozens injured, including 10 killed, including two children, tragically, when apparently some of the ordnance passed through that building and went into part of the march. So while European and United Nations leaders condemn using children in combat zones, which is appropriate, as a general rule, you don't use children in combat zones. That shouldn't be part of your national policy. We're going to send young kids into harm's way in battle zones. Well, while the Europeans and the UN, they condemn using children. In fact, they condemn it by policy. Yet they have never condemned the Palestinians who systematically put children in harm's way. They advertise on TV trying to get children into the battle, so that when children get killed, those kids are pawns, expendable in an attempt to get world opinion on the side of the Palestinians. And instead of condemning the Palestinian, the PLO, Hamas, and Islamic Jihad, and Palestinian media, and the universities for tolerating and even advocating the use of kids in battle, Europe and the UN have already condemned Israel for today's incident. All right, following this tragedy, it is a tragedy, and Israel should defend itself. And Israel's got a full-on investigation going to find out if they did anything wrong. And if they think they did not follow their own policies, they said they will suspend the Gaza operation while they figure out what went wrong and how to correct it. But immediately following the incident, Israel offered the Palestinians medical assistance and evacuation to Israeli hospitals for the wounded. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. By the way, my producer just put up a note, the Bible tour of Israel. That's a video we put together, just extraordinary. If you want to learn about Israel, we went to Israel, took a videographer along the way, and put together a two-hour Bible tour of Israel. I think you'll enjoy that. Okay, in Denver, Leonard, speak your mind.
Well, Bob, first of all, the Palestinians, the Arab countries very often use their children. Golda Meir said, "We will never have peace until the Arabs decide they love their children more than they hate us."
Yeah, that's been said for decades now.
And, you know, you didn't have to say any more than Europe had condemned it for me to know that Israel had done something praiseworthy.
Well, that it could be that they were justified. These are the initial reports, as I could find them, in the American and Israeli media.
Oh, as soon as Europe condemns it, you know it's wholesome.
Well, I would say that's generally true.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Leonard. Appreciate the call. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, we did, there was an event today on UC Irvine, University of California at Irvine, and it was a Free Palestine event, Free Palestine. And we contacted Muslim Student Union there at University of California, Irvine, to say since they had a Free Palestine event today, the day of this terrorist attack, it'd be especially apropos if they wanted to come onto a live talk show in Denver, a 50,000-watt AM station, and talk through the issue. of Israel and Palestine, and they called just a few minutes before the show and said, no, thank you. They declined. But the argument that I wanted to make to them and let them rebut it was this. I wanted to ask them to defend the claim that Israel took the Palestinians' land, their country, to defend that claim. Because as far as I can tell, there never was a Palestinian country. If you're out there and you think that there was and that the Palestinians had a country, Israel became a nation May 14th, 1948. So I'd like to know, who do you think, who was the leader of the Palestinian country before Israel claimed their homeland? Who was the leader? Well, if you don't remember his name, do you remember his title? Was the leader a prime minister? Was he a president? Or was he a king? Was it a monarchy? What is it? Was it a representative republic? Was it a parliamentary form of government? What form of government did they have? If you can't remember the name of the leader of the Palestinian country that Israel stole, maybe you could remember its boundaries. Where were its boundaries? Which Arab countries were its neighbors? Who was its ambassador to the United Nations, to the United States? Right? Who, the Palestinian country. When was their constitution ratified? Or did they have a constitution? If you're thinking back in history and trying to answer these questions and you can't figure out, well, who was the leader of the Palestinian country? How about this question? What was the name of their country? What was the name of it? Surely if you have a country, it has a name. What was the name of the country? It had no name. It had no leader. It had no constitution. What was their currency? What kind of currency did they mint? Well, what kind of coins did they mint? What kind of currency did they print? Whose face was on their dollar bill? Well, did they have dollars or shekels or pesos? What did they have? The Palestinians, what did they print? Oh, they didn't print any currency. They didn't mint any coin? That's weird. Usually countries do that. What kind of stamps did their postal service print? Well, they didn't have a postal service in 1948? The name of their country, could it have been Palestine? That's not likely. In 1948, if you read articles back then about the Palestinians, you know who the articles back then referred to as the Palestinians? The Jews who had been for a century then returning to their homeland. The Palestinians in 1948 were the Jews. They weren't the Arabs. They were the Jews. It's not likely that the Arabs there in Israel, in what anciently and today we call Israel, it's not likely they would have called their country Palestine anyway. And the reason is, in their language, in their alphabet, they don't pronounce P. That's not something an average Palestinian in Gaza or the West Bank would pronounce a word with a P in it. They would pronounce a word with a B in it. So when they refer to themselves or the country that they now want from Israel, they call it Palestine. They call themselves Palestinians. Now, if you have a country and you have a name for your country, most likely you're going to call it something that you can pronounce. Very few peoples call their country something they can't pronounce. Right? That'd be unusual. So I would say that these are some simple, basic historical facts that if you gathered 500 public high school teachers, history teachers, I'm going to ask people in the studio audience. I'm going to ask this question in the studio audience. If you gathered 100 history teachers from public high schools, 100 of them, how many would know the answers to those questions? Okay, out of 100, I'm seeing 0, 0, 0. How, I'm looking all around the room. 0, 3? I don't think 3. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't know that the answers are none and they didn't exist, but they wouldn't know the answer. They wouldn't be able to say there was no leader, no name of a country, no borders with neighboring states, no currency, no constitution. They wouldn't know that because they believe the historical revisionism, the rewriting history, that Israel stole the Palestinians' country. They stole their land. Now, Israel did take, they did take the Gaza Strip, and they did take the West Bank, and they did take the Golan Heights. But who did they take them from? Did they take them from the Palestinians? Now, so that's the question. Did Israel take those chunks of land from the Palestinians? Well, if you ask history teachers, 100 public high school history teachers, who did Israel take the Golan from? Who did they take the West Bank from? Who did they take Gaza from? I'm afraid to guess how many could answer all three. Would it be a really low percentage? I'll ask my studio audience again. If we ask the 100 high school teachers, history teachers, who did Israel take the Gaza from, the Golan Heights, and the West Bank, what I'd like to know is what percentage of public school teachers would know the answer to that? That? Come on! One? Zero? Zero? Oh, brother. Okay, well, this is who they took those chunks of land from. Now, those chunks of land, that might be about half of Israel proper, the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and the Golan, in rough terms. Well, who did they take the other chunk from? The chunk from which they took the other three chunks. Did they take it all? Did they send a naval armada down the Atlantic into the Mediterranean, land on a beachhead at Tel Aviv and invade and take the center part of Israel? And then from there, take these other chunks of land? No. They were, after having a monarchy there for many centuries, a couple thousand years ago, and then in AD 70, the Roman Empire dispersed the Jews from Israel so that they lost their land to an unjust occupation of Romans. Back then, I guess today, for public school teachers, that'd be Italians today, I guess. Bunch of Italians. Man, Italians cause a lot of trouble, huh? I'm half Italian, so if you're a liberal and having a heart attack, take a sedative. Israel was given by Britain. Britain had the British mandate. Britain had that land for a long time. And Britain gave the center part of Israel to the Jews after World War II with the agreement of the United Nations. By a United Nations resolution, so many Jews had been slaughtered in Germany and by the Nazis that the United Nations decided, they voted on a resolution to allow Israel to re-exert their sovereignty over their own homeland. So Israel, the Jews, could have a homeland. Now the Arabs, do the Arabs have a homeland? Well, Arabs have, what, 22 countries surrounding Israel? I don't know the total population of all those countries. Is it 100 and some million people surrounding 5 million Jews? One little country the size of New Jersey is surrounded with 5 million people, is surrounded by, what, 150 million Arabs? And they're all saying that all of their misery, all of their poverty, all of their disease is all because of Israel. It's Israel's fault. And so the Jews took Gaza from Egypt, not from a Palestinian state, from Egypt. And why did they take the Gaza from Egypt? Because Egypt was repeatedly attacking Israel after Israel was established. And by the way, UN countries, by charter, UN countries have pledged to respect the boundaries of their neighbors and not to have hostilities over national boundaries. So at any rate, Egypt had repeatedly attacked Israel. And so Israel said, you know what? This is getting tiring. It's getting onerous killing Egyptian soldiers. So we're going to take this chunk of land, which geographically it's part of Israel anyway. I mean, what does Egypt have? They got all the land of Egypt, the Nile. They got to go across that delta there and take the Gaza Strip, which is part of Israel. It's not even a part of Egypt. It's not on the continent of Africa. So Israel said, you know what? We're taking back this strip of land here because you guys keep using it as a bridge to attack us. So Egypt, you attacked, you lost. Too bad for the losers. You lost this land. That's what's fair and just in warfare. That's proper. And so Jordan kept attacking. And Jordan, its boundary, Jordan is where Jordan is today. And the Jordan River, they would send their armies over the Jordan River. And the West Bank was Jordan's land on the west side of the Jordan River. And they would repeatedly attack Israel militarily, as in an orchestrated war, five Arab countries simultaneously, their armies attacking Israel. And Israel would have to annihilate five incoming Arab armies. I mean, it gets old. So the Jews said, okay, Jordan, you're losing the West Bank, which geographically, historically is part of Israel anyway, because you use your land on the west side of the Jordan, in other words, all along Israel, you use it to attack us. So you've attacked us, you lost, so we now are taking the West Bank. In Syria up north by the Sea of Galilee, they launched missiles at the Jews for decades, every night for decades and day, launching mortars at farmers in the Galilee. And so Israel finally said enough is enough. And although Syria had decades to dig in, and boy, did they dig in on that, the mountains of the Golan, Israel in one night. And you know why they won that battle in one night? Because the men they sent up there toward almost certain death, every one of those soldiers were children who had grown up in the Galilee on the kibbutzes and on the farms in the Galilee. And they, as they grew up, they knew the monster in the mountain who fired, rained down death on them and their family and their neighbors during the entire childhood. And they were the ones who made up the armed forces that went and took the Golan Heights from Syria. And they won that battle in one night. And from then until today, not a single shot has been fired from the Golan against an enemy. Not one shot. Never mind mortars, artillery rounds, not a rifle, not a pistol shot. No aggression from Israel to its neighbors in Syria. So yeah, Israel has taken some land from its neighbors, but not an inch, not a square inch of land from the Palestinian people. I'm sorry, I shouldn't make fun. It's the Palestinian people. I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. It's the Palestinian people. All right, so when we are told that the Jews, what? The Jews have no right to the land? So we asked a student, a Muslim student at UC Irvine, we asked him in trying to set up the interview whether or not he supported Hamas. Now, Hamas is probably the second most notorious terrorist group in the world next to Al-Qaeda. Slaughtered, many, many hundreds of people, brags about their recruitment efforts for suicide bombers, targeting school buses of children, slaughtering men, women, and children indiscriminately. And the response was, well, we don't support Yasser Arafat, but we support Hamas. Now, Hamas is far more, I mean, Yasser Arafat is a terrorist, but he's more two-faced. And publicly, he says he condemns terrorist bombings, suicide bombings, but privately, he funds them. He's paid. We found the receipts from the PLO paying for the bombs used by suicide bombers. And we found, you know, the links to from Yasser Arafat to terrorism are beyond doubt. If anyone will honestly look at the evidence, Arafat's the father of modern terrorism. And they said, well, we're against Yasser Arafat, but we support Hamas. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that these guys, they are radically in support of terrorism. And UC Irvine allows their Muslim student union to have a significant event with a stage and signs, Free Palestine. And, you know, Hamas's political position on Israel is Israel should not be allowed to exist. And if they have to drive the Jews into the Mediterranean, if they have to exile them from their land, if they have to kill them, whatever, Israel should not exist. That's Hamas's longstanding and current political policy. And the stories out today said that these tank shells killed 10 people. This occurred outside of a refugee camp in Gaza. How do you have a refugee camp for Palestinians in Gaza? Gaza is where they live. That'd be like having a refugee camp of Americans in Denver. Well, you're a refugee camp if you're in another country. But if you're in your own country for 45 years, get a grip. Get a grip. Get a job. Get a house. And have a life. But they keep people in misery in Gaza, in the West Bank, because the whole population is a pawn used so that its misery might bring public world opinion against Israel. So here at Bob and Yurt Live, we do our best to cut through the cliches of the media and get to the truth. And part of the reason we think we can do that is because we study the Bible, we take it seriously, and when you pray for wisdom from God, you should be able to see through lies, deceit, and veneer. So we invite you to study the Bible with us. You can go to our website. That's the best way to check out our Bible study materials at kgov.com. kgov.com. Click on the store in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. Or call us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 800-836-9278. You might want to read the plot, our overview of the whole Bible, or get the plot album. You might enjoy it. This is Bob Benyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.